ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You can't set ambitious emissions reduction targets without talking about clean energy. So as Queensland sets these targets, what happens to the people working in one of the biggest coal-producing states in Australia? Hello, I'm Callie Buchanan. The Queensland government has passed laws promising a 75% cut in emissions by 2035, saying that by then, 80% of the state's energy will come from renewables. But as Stephanie Smale reports, conservation groups are welcoming the move, but energy experts aren't convinced Queensland can pull it off.
Shifting Queensland from its coal-fired past to a renewable future was never going to be easy. But the Queensland Premier Stephen Miles says locking in a policy for a big emissions target and a renewable energy goal are key steps.
We are fighting for a future where we make things here in Queensland, where we have quality jobs in our regions for our children, and where we protect our natural environment for our kids so they can grow up to have the jobs of the future.
The so-called Clean Economy Jobs Bill sets a 75% emissions reduction target by 2035, based on 2005 emissions. In terms of targets, that puts the Sunshine State behind Victoria, but in front of New South Wales. Queensland's business community says it's keen to get on board, but there are concerns about how much extra work and cost will be needed. Emma Clark is from the lobby group Business Chamber Queensland.
It really can't be done, you know, without the input of the state's business community, but we really need more detail. We need to know there isn't going to be a more difficult regulatory environment for businesses, and we need to know that it's not going to be another layer of red tape or regulatory burden.
She points out finding the 100,000 person strong workforce the government says it needs to build and manage the huge number of renewable projects won't be easy.
We're hearing from businesses already, it's hard to find people in the regions to run their business as it is, let alone deliver on renewable energy projects.
Queensland's mining giants are worried too. In a statement, the Queensland Resources Council points out between 2030 and 2035, the state government has promised to chop emissions by nearly half. A spokesman says that's steeper than any other state, territory or national target, and it's seeking further detail. Conservation groups have welcomed the shift, though, describing the emissions target as globally significant. Climate and Energy Policy Manager for WWF Australia, Ariane Wilkinson, says the state government's move to link emissions cuts with renewable energy is a good one.
The most important thing is that the emissions reduction targets and the renewable energy targets have to go together. You can't have one without the other, and doing that unlocks fast climate action.
She concedes finding a skilled workforce to deliver Queensland's renewable energy promises will be challenging.
Skill shortages for the clean economy is something that all governments are going to have to deal with. As long as there's clear policies in place, backed by legislation, that unlock those kind of training opportunities, investment opportunities in making sure we have the skilled workforce, that is a problem that can be solved.
The Queensland government says it's committed $19 billion in capital investment over the next 4 years to support new wind, solar, storage and transmission. It set a target of 50% renewable energy by 2030, 70% by 2032 and 80% by 2035.
Relative to the other states, the Queensland target is the least ambitious in terms of quantity of change.
Bruce Mountain is the head of the Energy Policy Centre at Victoria University. He points out plans to roll out renewable energy projects en masse in other states and territories are hitting roadblocks.
It's proved to be the case that in those states, South Australia and Victoria, where there's been quite a lot of wind and solar expansion already, that electricity transmission access and expansion has become a huge issue. And getting the social license for both the wind and solar farms and the transmission expansion is proving to be very much harder than I think the planners had anticipated.
Bruce Mountain points out mass storage is likely to be an issue too. He explains Queensland won't need huge amounts of storage yet, but that will change when renewable energy generation starts booming.
But once it gets to those high levels, absolutely enormous amounts are needed. And will we have the appetite for the necessary investment for that? I don't think these things have been canvassed necessarily with the transparency that's necessary. I think I'm certainly doubtful that that rate of change is actually going to be achieved.
Professor Bruce Mountain, Director of the Victoria Energy Policy Centre at Victoria University. There's more to producing clean energy than setting targets. More than 100 renewable energy projects are waiting for approval under the federal government's environment protection laws. It's been described as the single biggest challenge for delivering clean power in Australia. Pushback from farmers and regional communities means developers are increasingly seeking out uncleared or undeveloped land for potential projects. And while this avoids conflict with landholders, it's potentially threatening the habitats of native species, the kinds of species that reducing climate change hopes to save. Here's National Regional Affairs reporter Jane Norman.
In far north Queensland, nature photographer and conservationist Stephen Nowakowski is still processing a decision that's been 3 years in the making.
It was a feeling of relief, but also frustration that we had to fight against a project that should never have been proposed in that location in the first place.
That project was the proposed Warroora Station Wind Farm, next to the Wet Tropics of Queensland World Heritage Area. ARC Energy had planned to clear 500 hectares of native vegetation for the project, which, because of fierce local opposition, had been drastically scaled back from 200 turbines to 42. But late on Friday, ARC Energy announced it was no longer proceeding with the project, and Stephen Nowakowski's fight was over.
It's an oxymoron to think that we can clear our forests to try to save the planet.
Before it was axed, the wind farm was being assessed under federal environmental laws because it had the potential to impact the habitats of threatened species, including koalas and the magnificent brood frog. But that process had taken 3 years, and a final decision had been delayed five times. John Corbell from the Clean Energy Investor Group says it's a problem many projects are encountering.
At the moment, timeliness and consistency of the application of federal environment law is poor.
And how long is it taking?
We see many instances where projects are taking several years to achieve an assessment decision. So these types of delays are simply unacceptable, and they're holding up the rollout of clean energy projects across the country to allow the government to meet its 82% target by 2030.
A record 130 renewable energy projects are currently being assessed by the Federal Environment Department, which, according to government figures, is taking around 80 weeks or 20 months to reach a final decision. The minister responsible, Tanya Plibersek, recently committed $100 million to help speed that up. But it's a careful balancing act for the government, supporting the rapid rollout of renewables to cut emissions while ensuring the wave of new projects doesn't harm the environment in the process.
The bottom line is important habitat is not the place to put renewable energy.
Felicity Wade is from Labor's Environment Action Network, which wants wind and solar projects to be limited to cleared land.
You've really got to find land that has already been used and repurpose it for this important infrastructure.
The Australian Conservation Foundation Kelly O'Shaughnessy says clearer guidelines are also desperately needed.
So we need really strong planning in Australia that actually says these are parts of Australia that we need to protect for nature, critical for our wildlife that we all love. These are the parts of Australia where we can develop. And when it comes to renewable energy, they can actually identify renewable energy zones to make sure that we're not putting renewable energy in places that will damage nature.
Kelly O'Shaughnessy from the Australian Conservation Foundation, ending that report by Jane Norman. As clean energy projects look for places to be built and planning approval, Queensland's mining industry remains one of the state's biggest employers. And last year, a national survey by Headspace revealed that the cost of living was the single biggest concern for young Australians. So it probably then doesn't come as a surprise that although it can be a tough place to work, especially for young women, more and more young people are turning to the mining industry to make money. Scout Wallen investigates why young people are finding work in the mining sector.
I was working in fertilisers where I built connections down in Victoria. One of those connections then moved up into the mining industry and contacted me and offered me a role working with them.
It might not be everyone's cup of tea, but for 27-year-old Sienna Mallon, taking up this offer was a no-brainer. And so 2 years ago, she swapped her chilly home in Victoria for the scorching heat of central Queensland.
One day it was like 1st of October and I woke up and it was like 40 degrees or something. And I remember being like, as a Victorian, this is outrageous.
Now she's a superintendent and loving it. And she's built a huge TikTok following, sharing videos of her mining life with 125,000 followers.
Made this video while I was making my coffee saying that mining industry is not for the faint of heart when you've got to wear long sleeves and long pants to go to work at 40 degrees on the 1st of October. And then I started getting heaps of questions like in that, like, how did you get in? What do you do? So then I just kept answering those questions.
I live in a small mining town. I'm given this house as part of the contract that I work for, and the house is owned by the company that I work for.
You're getting a fit check. We've got hard yakka, short sleeve work shirt. I'm going to say it as if I've never used a radio before, and let's see what type of response I get from someone on the other end. Good morning. Can I please get a radio check? Thank you. Is this guy?
You're welcome.
That is not how I expected it to go.
The Bowen Basin in central Queensland is one of the largest coal reserves in the country. It's where Crystal Liu is also starting her career.
I never knew I wanted to go into mining in the beginning. I did my first internship and I loved it.
Crystal's now working as a graduate engineer in a coal mine here.
And I really liked the engineering side of it. It was very interesting in terms of the chemical engineering aspect. I hop on the bus at 4:40. And I get here at 5 and we leave at 5:30 on the dot. But I honestly don't feel the 12 and a half hour days. It honestly goes by so quickly. And I feel like being on site and going out in the field, there's so much to do on a day-to-day basis.
Sienna and Crystal are part of a growing cohort of younger Aussie women heading out to work in the mines. Kirsty Sewell runs Industry Resumes Australia, a company which helps people find jobs in the resources and mining sector. She reckons she's seen a huge increase in younger people jumping into the field.
I've been doing this for the past 10 years, and predominantly it used to just be middle-aged men that would be needing resumes for FIFO roles, but lately I'm seeing a lot more of my clients are female and also younger, so more within the 18 to 25-year-old age bracket.
According to federal government data, the average earnings of a mining sector worker is $2,403 a week, higher than the average of $1,300.
So the one thing that about earning the money that we earn as well is the financial stress goes away. So what I worry about now is, have I saved enough money, not how can I afford to live?
The gig has helped Sienna cut down her student debt.
I worked out that if I was to stay in my role down south, it would have taken me 25 years to pay off my hex debt, whereas it's only going to take me 5.5 years to pay it off in the role that I'm in.
For Crystal, the FIFO roster is also part of the appeal.
The flexibility of the lifestyle really surprised me. Transitioning over as a grad and then becoming FIFO, I love my roster routine. Have a long weekend every single weekend, get all my work done in short span of 4 days.
According to Women in Mining and Resources Queensland, which is linked to the mining industry's lobby group, Queensland has the highest number of younger women in mining, with 38% of women in Queensland mining younger than 34.
Being a woman, I've never felt, I wouldn't have the same opportunity as anyone else here.
But it isn't all pots of gold, or coal in this instance, under the rainbow.
Some of the challenges would be obviously working in a predominantly male environment.
It is still a very challenging environment for young women to manage their way through. So I don't agree that it shouldn't be for the faint of heart, but at this current point in time it is.
Sienna Mallon ending that report from Scout Wallen. So while there are many challenges when it comes to reducing emissions and providing clean energy, there are lots of reasons to get a move on. Australia's agriculture sector is facing significant long-term threats to farm productivity, resilience and sustainability. That's according to the CSIRO's Ag 2050 report. And farmers are being encouraged to talk about it as a matter of urgency to safeguard the future. Dr. Catherine Wynne co-authored the report, and she tells Jeremy Fernandez there are 5 fundamental changes for farmers to consider.
There are some risks and challenges that we're facing, you know, trends like climate change, supply chain disruptions, you know, workforce issues. And we looked at those as well as, from an innovation perspective, the long timelines that we have for agricultural innovations. So unlike other areas of innovation, agricultural innovations, they take a long time to develop and they also take a long time to adopt throughout the sector. And so if we're thinking about what the future might look like for agricultural and farming systems by 2050, we need to start now in terms of thinking what do we need to do from an innovation perspective.
And so what, you've cast ahead 25 years. Yeah. What does the future look like?
Well, we're not too sure. We've done evidence-based scenarios in this project. So we've spent a lot of time working with our researchers at CSIRO, as well as over 100 participants from across the agricultural sector, so farmers, industry groups, government, research, to co-design through stakeholder consultations as well as workshops what those plausible futures might look like. And we came up with four scenarios.
And what were those four scenarios? Paint us a picture.
Yeah, so in the end, we came up with these four scenarios. They range from the less desirable, where we either go from, business as usual type trends that lead to more of a climate survival scenario, or even worse, like a climate sort of disaster.
The idea is that the climate changes so much that a farm becomes inoperable or
unviable. That's right. But on the other hand, there are some more desirable scenarios. So ones where we see more agricultural productivity, more technology being adopted, and more environmental restoration and that sort of thing. So,
how much can those strategies outrun the changes we're seeing?
It's a great question. So far, we have been able to outrun the changes, particularly climate change in Australia. Australian farmers have done a really great job in doing that. But we think that with the changes ahead, and particularly the complexity of it, that what we're doing today is not going to be enough to keep ahead of those changes in the future. And that's why this is an opportunity now to really think about what those futures are that we want to pursue and how are we going to do that.
Profitability is really key factor here, isn't it? Because there's been a long-term decline in profitability of farming. Do you see that at least being stemmed by some of these strategies?
Yes, so profitability and productivity we have seen declining. That said, you know, to date, farmers have been able to stay ahead of things like climate change. But the core really here is that we do need to change what we're doing to make sure that we are facing the future in the right way and making sure that we're ready for it.
What's the take-up in the agricultural sector for some of these ideas?
Well, we've had a really great experience with this project. As I said, we did stakeholder consultation and workshops. We had over 100 participants from across the sector take part in our workshops and consultations.
And a lot in the sector already consider themselves stewards of the land, right?
Absolutely. So it was great to see the excitement and interest in this process, because the process is quite different to what perhaps a normal farmer would do on their day-to-day, you know, activities. So it was really great to see them participate and really think about what the future might look like, quite far out to what they normally think.
Beyond their lifetimes, possibly, and beyond their careers. So thinking about the next generation ahead, I want to ask about the different regions of Australia. We've seen climate affect all parts of Australia in very different ways. Do you have an idea of which regions are more affected than others?
That's something that we were really interested in. This project and this report is on a national, took a national perspective, but it's one of the next steps that we want to do in terms of some modelling and thinking about what this might mean for regions. So what it means if you're a farmer in the Mallee versus in parts of Western Australia. We're sure that there are differences in terms of what the scenarios might look like at a regional perspective, and that's one of the next steps we want to model and put more evidence to.
Co-author of the CSIRO's Ag 2050 report, Dr. Catherine Wynn. If you'd like to explore even further what it takes to put food on plates around the world, join me, Callie Buchanan, and our team of specialist reporters from across Queensland as we break down the big issues of rural life, from the food you eat to the clothes you wear and the home you live in. It's all available for you on the ABC Listen app. Just favourite the Queensland Country Hour or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.